From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, President-elect Trump's promise to repeal the Affordable Health Care Act could leave New York billions of dollars in the hole. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on Trump's impact on New York and immigration. And Governor Cuomo tells the state inspector general to launch an investigation into racial bias in the state prison system after a New York Times investigation. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. President-elect Donald Trump has promised to repeal the Affordable Health Care Act, also known as Obamacare, and replace it with something else. While no one really knows what that means, one health care analyst with a prominent Albany think tank says New York could be billions of dollars in the hole as a result. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
In December of 2014, Governor Cuomo's administration decided not to allow hydrofracking within New York's borders. But 2 years later, scientists and professors from Cornell University say the state's use of natural gas is on the rise and has increased by 18%, with over 500,000 new business and residential customers signing up for gas service. Bob Howarth is a professor of ecology and environmental biology at Cornell. He studied climate change for 3 decades.
I think New Yorkers need to wake up. We've banned fracking to produce our own, but we are importing shale gas, and we need to take responsibility for that.
The gas comes mainly from across the border in Pennsylvania, where hydrofracking is allowed. While natural gas was once considered a bridge fuel between coal and oil and cleaner renewables like wind and solar, they say new research shows gas contributes even more to global warming than previously believed. They consider it a climate disaster. Cornell's Tony Ingraffia, who co-authored with Howarth a groundbreaking study in 2011 on the greenhouse gas footprint of shale gas, says the hydrofracking and burning process does not emit as much carbon dioxide as other fossil fuels, but it does emit methane, which even in small amounts can be equally harmful and contribute to climate change.
Now we have undoubtedly in the literature proof that methane is not a good bridge fuel. It's not good for anything.
But he says the politicians aren't listening. Governor Cuomo's Public Service Commission has a plan to reduce the state's electric grid's reliance on fossil fuels to 50% by 2030, with the other half supplied by renewable energy. The plan uses 3 aging nuclear power plants upstate as a partial bridge fuel source. Ingraffia says that's a start, but he says the plan does not cut emissions far enough or fast enough.
New York has ample resources to do a complete transition to renewable energy in our lifetimes, everybody in this room, including me. And it just takes a little bit more political will and a little bit more concern from Wall Street.
A spokesman for the state's Public Service Commission, which designed the 50% renewable by 2030 plan, says the program is ambitious and, in fact, is so aggressive that the fossil fuel industry has filed a lawsuit against it. According to data from the Public Service Commission, the use of natural gas is trending up, but it's replacing, in many cases, dirtier diesel oil and other fuels. The scientists say the election of Donald Trump to the presidency and Trump's selection of Oklahoma Attorney General Scott Pruitt, who says he does not believe in climate change, to be the head of the EPA, means New York needs to work even harder than ever to reduce greenhouse gases. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, this week, the issue of immigration and what a coming Trump administration would mean. And we're talking about New York State. And New York State Senator, a GOP Senator, Robert Ort, sent a letter warning the SUNY campuses against the sanctuary movement, and we've been hearing about cities declaring themselves sanctuaries for immigrants.
You know, David, President-elect Trump, in the art of the deal, talked about saying things and then having them in order to make the deal. It is unclear just how far he's willing to go. During the past week, we saw Trump host the heads of all of these major cyber companies and others who were innovators in the United States, all of whom were worried that they weren't going to be able to import the kinds of workers that they needed in order to keep their business going. From what I can tell, it was a closed meeting. The president was saying, don't worry. So as we have often seen, nothing means anything, really. Now, lots of towns and lots of villages and some states are now either considering or implementing sanctuary movements and saying, not in our city, not in our town, not on our SUNY campus. So we have the specter of people showing up in black suits with earbuds, in contradistinction to the will of the people in a particular area, and now you see a potential fight breaking out. And that's the nature of federalism, you know, shared sovereignty between the feds and the states, in which, up until now, the feds have almost always won. So this could get ugly, is the point. And when we have a state senator saying, don't have the sanctuary on college campuses, I'm warning you, what you create is, of course, a potential for some real bad dissonance and legal haggling.
Let's stay with the impact of Trump in New York for a second. Our Karen DeWitt this week has a story about the Affordable Health Care Act, also known as Obamacare, that President-elect Donald Trump has promised to repeal. And one health care analyst she's talking to in an Albany think tank says New York, and we've heard it from the state comptroller, could be billions of dollars in the hole as a result.
Well, I don't think there's any question about it. And if you've got a Democratic governor who is now apparently saying somewhat courageously, I think, and correctly, I got to stand between Trump and defend the people, there's not going to be a lot of sympathy in Washington for New York State, despite the fact that Donald Trump is a New Yorker. Look, the real question here is, who is going to save all those people who don't have health care and didn't have it, who want it and who want to keep it? And that is a real danger. And if, in fact, New York is going to have to pay for it, then, as you say, they're in the hole.
Let's stay with the state comptroller, Thomas DiNapoli, for a moment. You've been talking with him for many years now, including about his relationship with Governor Andrew Cuomo, which I guess you could describe as salty at best. DiNapoli's issued a report now, something you've talked to him about, for procurement reform, and he wants changes to the state's procurement practices in the wake of the criminal charges and allegations of corruption and awarding of contracts for state economic development projects that have ensnared the governor's top aides.
Well, I think you've said it all, David. Basically, what's happened is that Tom DiNapoli, who I consider to be the best serving state official in New York by far, has been picked on by Cuomo again and again and again. We don't know why Cuomo doesn't like DiNapoli, but we do know that DiNapoli is incredibly popular with a lot of people, and the people inside who know his work know that he is a dedicated servant who has a terrific staff, and their job is to get out there and to do audits. Well, along comes one of the greatest scandals we have seen in New York State. Two of the biggest buddies of Andrew Cuomo, one of whom has pled guilty, arranged to enrich themselves by dealing with not-for-profits and others. And along comes Cuomo and the state legislature, and this has to be looked at. And they say to Tom DiNapoli, you may not do pre-audits on these state and not-for-profit contracts that are going around. Well, I'm here to tell you folks, everybody, you'd have to be really, really sightless and not be able to hear if you really didn't believe that what we just have seen, this gigantic scandal where lots of people have been indicted, would not have happened or could not have happened if Tom DiNapoli had not been taken, if his job as a pre-auditor had not been taken away from him. Ladies and gentlemen, one and one makes two. It's disgusting. And Tom DiNapoli is right. Give him back those powers so this can't happen again.
Power of the press. The New York Times did quite an investigation into the prison system in New York State. That was followed by New York Governor Andrew Cuomo calling on the state inspector to launch an investigation.
Well, yeah. I mean, the fallback position is always going to be when you get caught and the state is caught. And now, the Times did a terrific series of stories on this. What we didn't know was going on. We didn't know about the gangs. We didn't know about the violence. We didn't know about the corrupt correction officers. Not all of them, but some of them. We didn't know about all of that. Of course we knew about it. So now you get caught. There's a major series of articles, and the governor comes out and says, let's have an investigation, please.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo has told the state inspector general to launch an investigation into racial bias in the state prison system following an investigation by the New York Times. Prison advocates say the article has highlighted long-known facts, but critics say many of the accusations are based on hearsay. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley with more.
In a recent article, The Scourge of Racial Bias in New York State's Prisons, The New York Times reports that prisoners of color were punished at higher rates and subjected to solitary confinement more often than white inmates. Black inmates at one upstate prison were four times more likely than white prisoners to be sent to isolation. The paper also found that blacks were held in solitary confinement for longer periods than white counterparts. Prisoners Legal Services of New York Executive Director Karen Murtaugh says she was interviewed and provided some data to the newspaper.
I see it anecdotally, the racial disparities in all the cases that come into PLS, but, you know, we had not seen it laid out in a report like that. So I think it's excellent that they were able to do that type of investigative reporting and put the data out there that actually shows that the disparities that we see anecdotally actually exist throughout the prison system.
The Correctional Association of New York is the only group in the state with statutory authority to enter prisons to monitor conditions. Scott Paltrowitz, associate director of its prison visiting project, says the article exposes a systemic problem across New York's prison system.
The New York Times article, very powerful that it's bringing attention to these issues that, you know, the Correctional Association and others have been pointing out for quite some time. This is a systemic problem, and it's not to blame correction officers. I imagine 99% of correction officers are good, decent human beings, but it's the fault of a system that has been put in place to carry out this kind of racist brutality and torture. At the Correctional Association, we have received complaints almost from every prison in the state on a daily basis about abuses that occur. So this is not just, you know, a few bad actors who are carrying this out, but this is really endemic to the system.
115th Assembly District Representative Janet Dupree, a Republican, is a member of the Committee on Corrections, who frequently visits the correctional facilities in her district. A staunch supporter of corrections officers, she finds the New York Times article outrageous.
I have never heard a racial slur made in the times that I'm there. And, you know, I walk down the blocks. I don't just sit in the superintendent's office. I'm not sure where the New York Times guys are getting their information. I just find it really difficult to think that it's rampant the way they try to portray it. Two of the reporters who did this report interviewed me. Must have been for a couple of hours. They have never printed any of my comments. One of them said to me as they left, well, they probably wouldn't because they didn't like my comments. So how's that for accurate reporting? And I'm not saying that inmates don't have some legitimate complaints, but we have to just make sure that the line is equal and fair on both sides.
NYSCOBA is the union that represents corrections officers. Spokesman James Miller emailed WAMC News a statement noting, quote, the flawed New York Times report failed to recognize that it's a hearing officer, not a member of NYSCOBA, who controls the disciplinary process for inmates. That determination depends on the severity of the infraction and the inmate's history of behavior in prison, and corrections officers have no role in that process, unquote. In the wake of the article's publication, Governor Andrew Cuomo on Tuesday directed the State Inspector General to look into allegations and recommend any necessary changes.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
A state Supreme Court judge has ruled that New York's previous Department of Environmental Conservation commissioner was justified in approving the proposed Bel Air Resort in the Catskills. A group that brought the suit is considering an appeal. The latest from the Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn.
In a decision dated December 5th, the judge upheld then-DEC Commissioner Joe Martin's approval for permits for the $365 million project. Gary Gales is project coordinator with Crossroads Ventures, developer of the Bel Air Resort at Catskill Park.
The decision speaks for itself. Everyone has had an opportunity to be heard. The court has rendered a judgment. So the way I look at it, it's time for us to move on and hopefully move this project forward after a long 16 years.
Kathy Nolan is chair of the Catskill Heritage Alliance, which, along with some landowners, brought the suit against the DEC and Crossroads Ventures.
The decision in this case from the judge in Albany is disappointing for our many members, and we are seriously considering whether or not to appeal the decision.
Catskill Heritage Alliance had petitioned the court to overturn the outgoing DEC commissioner's decision to cancel a planned adjudicatory hearing concerning the DEC permitting of the Bel Air Resort project. The group sought such a hearing to adjudicate aspects of the project it felt the DEC had failed to consider adequately before issuing the permits.
We are arguing that at the lower build alternative, one hotel and one golf course, is environmentally much less damaging, and therefore should have been the one chosen. The judge in that case said that the economics made the one hotel, one golf course alternative infeasible, but our experts showed that that's not the case.
The proposed Bel Air Resort consists of the High Mount Spa Resort and Wild Acres Hotel plus golf course. The resort would be built in both Ulster and Delaware counties in the towns of Shandaken and Middletown, respectively. Depending upon whether Nolan's grassroots group appeals the decision, another legal obstacle for Crossroads Ventures remains in Shandaken. Catskill Heritage Alliance also had filed legal action asking the state Supreme Court to vacate the Shandaken Planning Board's approval of permits for the project. The judge partially agreed, directing the Planning Board to have the Zoning Board of Appeals review the circumstances for a special use permit. Again, Nolan.
The case for the zoning issues is related to whether or not Crossroads Ventures can have multiple detached units in addition to their two large hotels. And we are arguing that they cannot have those and should have to take those out.
Crossroads Ventures Gales comments on this aspect.
So after 16 long years, multiple issues raised before the courts as it relates to environmental concern about the project, we're now reduced down to how do you define a lodge and a vacation resort.
The Shandaken Planning Board is holding a public hearing on the permitting matter December 21st in Town Hall.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. New York State's 10 economic regions will divide more than $700 million in new economic development funding grants. Governor Cuomo's administration announced the awards recently in Albany. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas was there and filed this report.
REDC funding supports hundreds of local economic development projects, including private company expansions, new startup businesses, higher education programs, and workforce development initiatives. This year, the Capital Region received $83.1 million as a top finisher among five regions and more than $2 million in grant funding for public and private development projects is headed to the city of Troy. Monica Kuzieski served as Troy's Economic Development Coordinator from 2012 until her appointment as Deputy Mayor in January 2016.
We had several wins yesterday, several non-for-profits, several private partners, as well as some grants that the city had actually proposed. We were very fortunate to have quite a few awarded. You know, we have some private partners out there who are doing some redevelopment efforts. They were awarded some great monies. The American Theater, which is the old cinema arts movie theater downtown, the developer proposed the renovation of that facility and the installation of a new movie theater in it. They were awarded grant funding, so we are really thrilled with that. Not only does that add an amenity to downtown that is not only good for our visitors and residents and our students, but it helps us continue to drive to become an 18-hour downtown and an 18-hour city, which is extremely important when you're trying to create that urban atmosphere of a, you know, live-work-play type of city.
While the Port of Albany received $5 million, Mayor Kathy Sheehan says there are many smaller projects in the city of Albany that have been funded.
There is funding for the furthering of a study and hopefully implementation of transforming one of the exit ramps from 787 into a linear park, which would be really exciting. There's funding for the Tivoli Preserve, daylighting the Patroon Creek, and that's a big undertaking and a big project, but we continue to invest in the Tivoli Preserve. It is one of these treasures in the city that not a lot of people know about, but that we are investing in and investing in a trail system for it.
$75,000 is earmarked for the Albany Symphony Orchestra's tour along the Erie Canal to mark its bicentennial. Mayor Sheehan says officials are looking into why the Palace Theater was overlooked, despite a request for about $4 million to help fund a proposed expansion.
Why that happened and what the Palace can do to get that project really off and running.
Sheehan believes the Palace project is ideally suited for the Regional Economic Development Council program.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We have help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1651. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time. For more news on New York State government and politics, for the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.